I'm Buddy Priest at Genius here, and let me just mention, give you a little bit of background about us as a family. Jeannie and I came to Colorado Springs to work here at Glen Eyrie 11 years ago, and we had 5 years on staff before that in London, England, and in those 5 years, I was the administrative assistant for Doug Sparks, who was our leader for Europe and the Middle East and Africa at that time. So we traveled a lot in Europe, and then we got this invitation to come here. We came as a family. Our daughters are now 22 and 20 years old. Neither is married, and since this is the college vacation, both are living at home with us at the moment. So we have a family of four, and thoroughly enjoy not only the work to which the Lord has called us, Jeannie and me, but just the opportunity to be here. And I'm very grateful to be among you this morning. I think you are about to be real missionaries. Jeannie and I perhaps are semi-missionaries, because it is not that much of a cultural transformation to move from Britain to the United States, or vice versa. And it's a very pleasant experience to do it in this direction. Others should judge whether it's pleasant the other way around. I think that I am the only person this week, Marvin, speaking to you from the international office, except that George Sanchez will be here during the commissioning service on Friday. And so I'd like to bring greetings, really sincere greetings, to you from Jerry White on behalf of him and the team. There are 12 of us in the international office, just over on the other side of the glen there, as many of you know. And our function is to give some service and coordination to the ministers around the world. Jerry is currently in Canada. Jim Peterson is in England. And George Sanchez is here and will be with you later, as I said. So that leaves me, and I'm thrilled to be here this morning. Actually, this is a rather delicate and ambiguous time for us this year, us in the international office, because we're going into a process that many of you are aware of trying to figure out how best we should relate together and function together worldwide in the 1990s. And the early stages of that process is sort of fact-finding, and we're inviting people to make comments on, do we need anything that is beyond the level of countries? Do we need any international people or functions? And I want to tell you that some mornings I feel that we're irrelevant, and some mornings I feel that we're redundant, because we're getting a lot of good comments coming in on how things should be handled, or how things should be improved, or what we could do better or cut back on. So it's sort of open season for us, and we just stand there smiling, and people make comments which are not meant personally, but actually are very helpful. We haven't been asked to go back to Britain yet. I'm going to be using handouts this morning. That will enable us to cover more ground faster. And the reason that I can use handouts is right there in front of me, Carol Smiley. I don't know if you've all introduced one another, but Carol has been my secretary for these many years, and it's a sore loss to see her going to Germany, but I think again for the Great Commission. So one of the last things that Carol did was assembled all this paper. So we're grateful for that. Thank you, Carol. Let's start with some information and some material to stimulate us on our global context. Now, I'm hooked up now. Would you be willing to get those green handouts there and perhaps split them in two and just pass them around? There should be one for each person here. Thank you very much. I do want you to make comments, ask questions, make suggestions as we go along. This should be interactive. This is not a monologue. This is not a speech. I want us to use the time most effectively. When we've glanced at what's here on this handout, then I'm going to, in the second handout, get more into what are the navigators doing, which will enable us to see specifically where we fit. Now, before I get into either handout, I came in a bit late. Did we pray? May I pray? Let's pray. Father, I would like to lay before you this morning the need that I sense that in this time we would engage our minds and our hearts, and that you would help us, Father, to move through a lot of material, heavy material, and to see those few things that are on your heart for us to absorb and to understand and to reflect on. I pray that you would help me to leave out what is not essential. I pray that you would guide my lips and my thoughts. And I ask for each of us, Father, that this would be a time that is pleasing to you and in line with the purposes of this seminar. Thank you that we can be together in Jesus' precious name. Amen. These four pages contain material, a little bit of which Terry Taylor has used when he wrote to all of us on that Focus on the Future document a few months ago, and it's just background, really. I don't think we need to go into it in too much depth, but it's important background because, as it says here at the beginning, what we are about here, why we are starting with global realities and trends, is because from Genesis 12 onwards, God has promised through us to bless all the nations. Therefore, it behoves us to have some overview of what is going on among all the nations. Isaiah 43, 6, and 7 is a very meaningful passage to me personally, has been now for about 5 years, and it's a familiar passage to us as navigators. God is in the business of bringing his sons from afar and his daughters from the ends of the earth, everyone whom he created for his glory, whom he formed and made. And you are going out to the ends of the earth in order to facilitate that process that is on the heart of God. Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth. Therefore, we need to know something and interpret something of this world so that we can pray and plan and act strategically. I've divided this material into three main sections. A is on the target, the people for whom Christ died, men and women. B is on the workforce, that's us. And C is on what you might loosely call the opposition. On the target, I will draw your attention just to a few items here. We all know, I think, that this is supposed to be the year in which the population of the world passed 5 billion. No one knows whether it is or not. It could have been last year or next year. Doesn't really matter. The moving thing to me is the last sentence in point one there. Every 4 days, 1 million people are added to the face of the earth. Not just 1 million are born. This is the net figure after the births and after the deaths. 1 million more people every 4 days. So indeed, the times are urgent and the laborers are few. Then I talk about population segments here. I was having lunch last week with Dennis Tongoi, who is one of our Kenyan staff leaders. And Kenya happens to be the country which is the fastest growing in the world in terms of population. More than 50% of everyone who lives in Kenya is under 15 years old. More than 50% are under 15. And the population of that country is currently doubling every 18 years. So there is a tremendous challenge for the navigators in countries such as Kenya. I mentioned some other points here, which we'll pass over. Point three, you're well aware of the move towards urbanization throughout the world. You've heard about it and seen it here in the USA, but it is an international thing. Over on page two, it's a rather scary thing from the point of view of the gospel, because many of the cities in the world which are growing fastest are in those areas which have been relatively untouched by the gospel. They are in Muslim areas, for example, and I'll show you some of those a little later. But we have to be alert to the trend of urbanization, and we have to realize that it's a tremendous challenge for us, because historically we've been very weak in the big cities south of the equator. Point five, by the year 2000, 70% of the world's population, I calculate, will be in nations in which traditional missionaries, if you like, missionaries stamped on your passport, will be either banned or restricted. A little later, I'd like to talk about one of the applications of that, Project Access. And we'll spend just a couple of minutes on that later this morning. So these are some of the trends in the lost, the people of the world, those whom you are going out to reach. In section B, the workforce, we just need to be alert to the tremendous internationalization of the mission force. There are now more than 16,000 cross-cultural missionaries who have gone out from countries such as Nigeria and India and the Philippines and Korea. And it's increasing extremely fast. And we have been historically pace setters in this movement. Way back in the early 70s, we were sending Singaporeans and other Asians. Now we need to begin work on this again because we've fallen a little bit behind in this area. I may show you some data on that later. Point two, you're well aware of, we call it, others call it, and we have picked up the word contextualization. But the thing that I want to emphasize, which makes sense to me personally, when all is said and done about contextualization, what is still needed, above all, is self-emptying relational love. The sort of love of a navigator missionary like Tom Heap, who has launched the ministry in Finland in the early 70s and has raised it up to the stage now that it's totally indigenous, it's all Finnish staff. And he did that without even learning the Finnish language. He did it because he loved them and they felt it and they knew it and they responded to the love and to the image of Christ in him. So he's now working in the Netherlands, Tom and Nancy Heap. Again, he won't learn Dutch, but he's already begun the good work of leading Dutchmen to Christ in a country which we thought was so secularized that we might even close the work down. Self-emptying relational love, as well as all the information and insights as regards cultural sensitivity and so forth. Tent makers, you're well aware of that trend, and of course that ties in with the closed countries. And then in point four, page three, the emphasis, especially here in the USA, it's not so pronounced among European Christians, but here in the USA, the emphasis associated with Dr. Ralph Winter on unreached peoples, hidden peoples, frontier peoples. again, I hope to talk a little bit about that later. Just briefly on the matter of the opposition, pause at the bottom of C1 and notice this illustration of what I mentioned earlier. There are seven Islamic cities which between, in the next 13 years, if you like, will reach and surpass 10 million people. These names are not very familiar to some of us. We would be hard-pressed to pinpoint all of these, I think, on a world map. The navigators only have a ministry, I believe, in two of them at the moment, Jakarta and Cairo. These are great cities, mushrooming cities, cities which are desperately needy. So urbanization is not just a joyride for us, it's a fantastic challenge. These are Islamic cities. Pray for them. Secularization in point two. One of the things that I'm deeply involved in at the moment is something called the World Value Study. We've got data that we've purchased for the navigators on 17 of our major ministry countries, and we're looking at the differences in the shifts in values. And secularization is, as you understand, not just a simple thing. It's not just, I was a Christian and now I'm a pagan. It's a very multifaceted thing, and it shows in strange areas of one's life. And sometimes we're unaware of how secularized we are. And so by the use of this value study and by the use of other information, we are trying to keep abreast of the tremendous rate of change in attitudes and beliefs around the world. How many of you have read the book Habits of the Heart? How many of you have read the book The Singular Generation? Okay. These, don't read them now because you're about to go overseas, but these are two of the key books describing what is happening in the USA as of now in terms of social attitudes, responses to the gospel, and so on and so forth. They're written by secular people, but they're all the more informative to us for that. But it's okay. You're going overseas, it doesn't matter so much. Other aspects of the opposition, I think we are familiar with most of this. Go down to about four lines below the foot of the page. In terms just of the response of compassion to a dying and a lost world, I don't get much turned on by statistics like you see here that people in Ethiopia only have $110 a month. I don't really know what to do with that. But I do get deeply troubled by this other statement that with the poor people of this world, the very poor, half of their children do not live to be 5 years old. That is That is very moving and very concerning. 50% of the children of the people who live in absolute poverty, 800 million of them, are not surviving currently until 5 years old. So it's a very needy world, and Satan is active. Page 4. As I've gone through this, although I haven't read them, I put Navigator applications all the way in italics. You pick that up as you've gone along. One of the very exciting things in the church at large, of course, is the opening of China, which we refer to just for a modest veil of security as East Asia. And some of you know we now have a significant and well-thought-through strategy for China and are placing people within China and also traveling in and out of it. So this is an important factor. A couple of others are mentioned there. Mobility goes both ways, you know. Mobility means that you're open to the gospel. Mobility also means that when I'm a long way from home, I'm going to throw off moral restraints because no one who knows me is watching me. It's a positive thing. It's a negative thing. We can look at it as an opportunity or a crisis. And then the church. In E1, you probably should insert the word professing Christians at the beginning of that. Professing Christians. Those who say, when asked, are you a Christian? Those who say yes are about a third of the whole world. Now, those who actually know and love the Lord are probably 10% of that. But a third of the world claims to be Christians, and it's a very rich third of the world. Again, our responsibility is paramount there. Would you believe that 5 new denominations occur every week? I think they rest from that on the Lord's Day, and then they start again on Monday. A lot of these are happening in Africa. Charismatics. Because of the zealousness of the charismatic and Pentecostal movements and because of the missionary Great Commission orientation of these movements, we're going to see a much higher proportion of charismatic missionaries. You're going to meet more charismatics overseas in the next 5 or 10 years probably than you have met here. The Signs and Wonders movement, for example, it's rampant in Britain, in New Zealand, in Cyprus, just to name 3 places where John Wimber has been in the last year. The good things in this, there are also perhaps some unbiblical things. This is not a theology discussion, but we just need to be alert to the rise of the charismatic renewal. Okay, all these things to me mean complexity, change, and challenge. Complexity that we need to grapple with in our own particular neck of the woods, our own environment. Change that we need to welcome and ride upon rather than be dismayed by. And challenge that the Lord, we can take the promises that the Lord has given us and move ahead in this world. That was very fast. Any additions to this? Any concerns or puzzlements about what I've said? Okay. Handout number 2. Volunteer? Thank you. The big heavy one. Please. This second set of material has to do with the navigators. And unashamedly, we're going to focus down on what is the Lord doing through us. And as you go through this, just have in the back of your mind that when we talk about ourselves, this is not, Lord willing, an attack of arrogance. This is just the best way to communicate this very simply. But in Matthew 13, for example, it says, every plant that my heavenly Father hath not planted will be rooted up. That's the context in which we need to be looking at this material about, quote, what have we accomplished? Any of you have memorized Psalm 44:3? Psalm 44:3 tells us that it's not by our might that we gain the victory, but it was the Lord's arm and the light of his face because he loved us. And he still loves us. Okay. The first 6 pages here, down to and including the block map, are some thoughts and some reports on our external progress. Pages 7 through 14 will have to do with the U.S. missions strategy of the navigators. And I'm going to bring Marvin in on that because he is the main architect of that strategy. And then we'll end up with just a glance at structure and, last but not least, some prayer requests. By the way, if you feel this is heavy and daunting, just reflect on what it would have been like 3 years ago before we decided not to gather into my office production statistics and financial statistics from all over the world. We used to have all this information, you know, how many converts in Bolivia for the last 10 years, And we looked at it and we thought, well, that's useful, I think, but I'm not quite sure what we do with it. And so our presentations got longer and longer and our relevance got less and less. And we decided, stop all this. It is of no relevance to the Great Commission for someone at Glen Eyrie to know how many converts we had in Bolivia. It does not allow us to serve you any better. So a lot of what we have left is information about our staff and the countries we're in, because we don't have, and I'm pleased in a way that we don't have, information on the progress of the ministry in terms of fruit. All right, page one. This is headed The Navigators and the Nations, and it's a little compact summary of who we are. We are the staff of the Navigators, and there are about 2,600 of us, including wives. And unusually, in any mission agency, there are more than 30 different nationalities of us. And that makes our global society a complex challenge and an exciting one. It's hard enough communicating to one another monoculturally, but the struggle to do so and to stay together and to make progress in such an organism is fascinating. Now, of these staff, point three, 17% are foreign missionaries, and you'll be going to swell that number a little. And we need to be sure here, as I think you are, that a missionary is not a person who leaves from New York and crosses an ocean or leaves from San Francisco. Missionary includes anyone functioning cross-culturally in their homeland as well, right? So when we say that only 17% of our staff are foreign missionaries, superficially we could say, well, that's not so good. Do we really need four people at home to support every one person who's going out? Well, we need to remember also that more and more since 1980, we have had a deepening vision in the Navigators for cross-cultural work within our own countries. Here, for example, U.S. Hispanics. We've just begun to pull together the Hispanic ministries in the States nationally. We're working with Koreans, also in the USA, and that is mushrooming in Southern California. We're working with Navajo Indians, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And not just ethnic cross-culturally. If I went up to the Garden of the Gods Club up on the Mesa there and worked among the rich Texans as my personal ministry, that would be fairly cross-cultural. We have some difficulty communicating, I feel, having listened to those people and tried to communicate already. So the cross-cultural ministry within our own countries, by its nature, a lot of this isn't measured. But all I want to emphasize is that although the proportion of navigators who have gone overseas is now 17% here and has been slowly going down, used to be 20% 5 or 6 years ago, yet the proportion, I believe, of cross-cultural missionaries within the USA is going up. Okay. Let's see. Point five. There are 62 countries that we have a ministry at the moment, and 20 of them are such that we would not put on a printed list the names of these countries. It's not a secret to you. It's just that when we put a lot of these things in print, they drift to secondary and tertiary audiences, and we really want to try and avoid that. But on this list here, you might like to note Austria. This is a country where we're just about to upgrade the ministry investment that we're making. Austria, at the moment, we use as a base for Eastern Europe. In future, we're going to do more than that. We're also going to have a team in Austria for the sake of Austria, a very needy and significant country within Europe. Korea, probably the most fruitful ministry in the Navigators at the moment, is not here in the USA, but is in Korea. In their student ministry, in a recent three-month period, a special push, they had 5,000 decisions for the Lord. Now, not necessarily 5,000 converts or 5,000 disciples, but 5,000 people stated that they wish to follow Jesus Christ as a result of our ministry. Pray for that ministry, because you read in the papers about the political turbulence, right? They're doing this in extraordinarily difficult conditions. Okay, let's see if there's anything else on this page. I think not, because some of the other stuff will come up later. Let's turn to page two. Now, please interrupt, because it won't be an interruption. You know, if I'm not making sense or if I'm leaving out something that you feel is really important, just interrupt. Okay, this second page is headed The Nations. And it tries to answer the question, if it is true that the Navigator mission is to multiply laborers in every nation. And if it is true that we have realized over the last 10 years that in Matthew 28, the word we translate nation is not merely country, but is something more than country, what does then the word nation mean and how should we use it? Now, many of you are familiar with all the literature on this, and there is a lot of it. The literature on people groups, the literature on peoples, the literature on ethnicity, etc., homogeneous units, many things. Most of them come out of California, a place of giant creativity for Christian mission. But what we have done here, to put it very, very simply, is we have drawn from the insights of Dr. Winter and Mark and World Vision and some of these other people, and we have had Dr. Winter here and listened to him and interacted with him. And we have, as an organization often does, we have a little bit navigatorized what he's doing. We have tried to take from it those things which appeal to us, and we have injected some of what we see in the New Testament also. Very simply, we, in our global planning, are looking towards a definition of nation, which you see there, about a third of the way down the page. A nation is a population of at least 1 million persons in the year 2000 who can be identified either as a people, or by their language, or by their nationality, the country they have, the passport they have. And you see these three streams going down the page. There are the people groups that Ralph Winter talks about, which turn into the peoples that are included in my definition. Now, 258 peoples in the world have more than 1 million persons in them. The Hausa in Nigeria, the Kurds in northern Iraq. These are peoples with more than 1 million persons comprising them. 258 such peoples. Languages, like the English language, the Spanish language, etc. There are 400 languages in the world which have more than 1 million native speakers. It's another way of looking at the people for whom Christ died. And finally, countries. There are 135 countries in the world which have more than 1 million people. We have tried to tie this to the New Testament. We have tried to use an understanding of the word nation or ethnos, which we believe is rooted in the Bible. Let me just show you one thing very, very quickly, just as a very partial demonstration of this. It so happens in God's providence that seven times in the book of Revelation, there is a description of the people who sing the song of the redeemed, who worship the Lamb. And there they are, the references and the descriptions. The first surprising thing is that each time, four different terms are used. Every time, these singers to the Lamb are mentioned. The second surprising thing is that three words run through each of the seven references. The red word, nation, is in each of the seven references. Ethnos is the Greek, same word as Matthew 28. The green word, language, the Greek word glossa. And finally, the blue word, people, the Greek word laos. So nations and languages and peoples are clearly, at least in the book of Revelation, something rather important in how God thinks about humanity. So what we've done, very simply, is that we have concluded that the word nation or ethnos, that is the red word, the Matthew 28 word, the Great Commission word, is a very broad word. It's used of swarms of bees. It's used of troops of soldiers. It's used of Jews and Gentiles. It's used of all sorts of things, secular and in the Bible. So that's our key overarching word. And then we have divided that into the peoples. There they are, the blue ones. Laos, the languages, the green ones, and the countries. The word country hardly occurs in the book of Revelation. We're not troubled by that. Why doesn't it occur? Because John was writing to urban fellowships within a province of the Roman Empire. So he wasn't bothered by countries. But we are highly bothered by countries. The first thing you need to know about me is what's in my passport. I'm British. Therefore, I can't go to Angola or Mozambique. Whatever. So here we are on this page again. We've taken the peoples, we've taken the languages, we've added in the countries, and we've said, as in our definition, these are three ways of thinking about the nations, and we believe there are about 440 of these nations in the world, of whom we have a presence in about 80. We've just got a toe in the water in about 80. We have fruit, that is, national laborers, in about 50 of the 80. And we're established, I'll comment on that word in a moment, in only about 19 of the 80. Okay, tremendous compression there. Very important discussion to have sometimes on what is a nation, what is a people. But am I communicating how we're thinking about this? Okay, good. Thank you. Now, in thinking about where the navigators are in the world, the next thing that we need to address is, okay, we're in so many nations, whether they're countries or languages or whatever. Thanks to you, guys, girls, we're going to be in more nations. In fact, for your information, we're entering about 3 new nations per year at the moment and have been for the last 5 years. So there is a period at the moment of lengthening the cords. So we've done that. But what are we looking for in these nations? Well, we're looking for converts, we're looking for fruit, we're looking for laborers. What else are we looking for? What would we like to see God fashion within the nation? This page answers that question. It says that as we look at the ministry in Botswana or in Bolivia or in Britain, we would like to see that ministry move through these 4 stages, the national ministry. We would like to see, obviously, a penetrating stage. If you go in as part of a new missionary team, you're going to be doing these things that you see listed here. You're going to be developing friendships. That's how you start, right? You're going to be orienting yourself to the culture. You're going to be trying to learn their language, etc., etc. These are the general things that most missionaries do in most countries when they start. Then we move into a developing stage, and a few nationals, you see there, begin to enter the workforce. It's not the leaders are still missionaries, but we've got a pretty good grasp by now on the culture. We know what we're doing, and we know why we're working at X rather than Y. Okay? Then a consolidating stage, when the nationals stand up and begin to embrace the vision. There are some national staff. There is emerging ownership. It really is moving ahead. And then finally, the established stage. And the 3 key things in the established stage, you might want to underline them, 3 key things are that the ministry should be biblically rooted, culturally relevant, and continuously effective in terms of our aim. I think that's pretty self-explanatory, but all those 3 are indispensable. We don't want to demolish any of them. So we're saying that we have 19 countries now in which, manifestly, the ministry meets those 3 criteria and these other criteria listed on the page. Very important to us. Look over on the next page, page 4. On the right here are a list of those 19 countries. Australia, Brazil, Canada, and so on. The ones with the asterisk are the ones that have their own national leader. 10 years ago, we used to think the most important thing under heaven was to have a national leader. New Zealand could never be established until a New Zealander was in charge of it. We've learned lots of lessons. We were wrong. Much more than the nationality of the top person, as it were, is what is going on in the ministry. Is it biblically rooted? Is it culturally relevant? And is it continuously effective? So we have several established countries which are still led by foreigners, and that is okay. So there they are, those countries. Now you see, on the one hand, for an individual, it's converts, disciples, and laborers. On the other hand, for the fulfillment of the mission and the reaching out to other nations, we need to see established nations raised up. If we don't have established nations raised up, we will always be an American work with some overseas subsidiaries to which we keep pumping in more Americans and more Americans, and they just receive and receive and receive. But the vision of the navigators is more like every nation to every nation. We want to see Singaporeans going to China. We want to see Bolivians going to Peru, etc. The established countries are the countries that are sending missionaries, and they will help us in that concept and that vision. Let me tell you a little story to show how ethnocentric we are, just very briefly. We're talking recently with the leader of our work in one of the Eastern European countries, Poland. Told him about some of the work we were doing, how we'd figured out, you know, and we had Poland on a list. Poland is a closed country, right? Can't even talk about the ministry in Poland. You and I can't just set up shop on a street corner and start leading people to Christ in Poland. It is a closed country. We know that. He laughed, and he said, no, you've got it all wrong. The USA is a closed country. Now, what he meant was this, as he explained it. From his perspective, he cannot get a visa to travel to the USA. He's a Pole. He's a communist, or he's in a communist country, even though he's a believer. So we are the closed country. He has great freedom in Poland, to begin, as the ministry matures, to send Polish navigator missionaries. He said that his vision, he has watched the Prime Minister of Poland, General Jaruzelski, and Jaruzelski goes to Angola, to Mozambique, to Afghanistan. He makes long-winded speeches, and he says how much the eternal friendship between the Poles and other good communist people is, and we will send resources and people to help you in Angola and in Mozambique. So he said, my government wants Poles to go to places like Angola and Mozambique. And he said, not only do I not think of Poland as a closed country, but I also have a vision to send Poles to other countries that you Americans can't get into. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that encouraging? That's special. Every nation to every nation. And we think, ah, we're free, they're closed, we will help them, they will do what they're told, etc., etc., etc. Not so. Not so. Okay. Page 5 is to do with blocks. Very compact page. I think all we'll do is move on to page 6. That helps, doesn't it? In page 6, basically we've divided the world into 12 blocks, and you see them there. Now, why did we do that? In a couple of sentences, we did that because in the early 70s, we tried to have a single unified global strategy. That strategy was associated especially with a man called Walden Scott, who's no longer on the staff. It was a masterly document, but it had a couple of big defects. One was that guys like you and I had no ownership in it. You know, we were just sent this 60-page document, this is the global strategy, look up your name in the index and do something according to what it tells you to do. I'm exaggerating a little, but the general thrust of the strategy was that it decided for countries how many people they should send, where they should send them to, how fast, what type, etc. We soon learned that that didn't turn people on. At least it didn't turn navigators on. We withdrew from that. And in my opinion, we withdrew too far. And in the late 70s, we had a period of sort of internal turbulence. We saw more missionaries coming home in some years than we sent out. We lost a little bit of our assurance that we were really following the Lord's will in our missionary program. Then in the early 80s, we came back into balance, and this map is part of the balance. It is the balance between, on the one hand, a unified, almost dictatorial global strategy that tells us all what to do, and on the other hand, nothing, a strategic vacuum, except for 62 countries each doing their own thing. Every man does what's right in their own eyes. Got it? 62 countries doing their own thing, bad news. One global strategy telling us all what to do, bad news. In the middle, this concept of the blocks. Why is this concept so helpful? Because we began to see that the people, let's take block 7, the people who should be planning and strategizing and moving ahead and praying in Africa were the leadership team who lived in Africa. They should write a strategy, not separate strategies necessary for every country, although that is good, but a strategy for the whole of Black Africa. And do you know what happened there? For Marvin, I think probably for 5 or more years, we had just been in 3 big countries in Africa, Ghana, Nigeria, and Kenya. And Marvin was the leader of one of those 3 countries. But we were not getting new missionaries to move out into other countries. When we said to the Africa leaders, such as Marvin and the nationals there, begin to plan for your whole continent, tell us what the continent needs. Ever since then, we've been entering at least one new African country a year. Because the African team rose up and took ownership and had a vision for their continent. That is what this little technique of the blocks has helped us to do. Okay? A balance between the global dictatorialness and the everyone doing what's right in its own eyes and sending 62 country plans into people at Glen Eyrie here for us to read. Country plans are necessary, but blocks have been a big blessing. Now we shift gears a little bit and we talk about the mission program of the U.S. Navigators. And page 7 is the preparatory page. And I just have listed here for you. Remember I told you there were 2,600 navigator staff worldwide? That's the left-hand column and you see what nationalities they are. Notice how about two-thirds of all our staff still are Americans. And then other countries developing, the British, Canadians, Koreans and Filipinos. I think 3 couples here are going to the Philippines. as I see from looking around and from what I know. And this has been a tremendously fast-growing work in the last few years. Nearly 80 staff now, and thanks to Ron York and Philip Flores and the others, it's probably doubled in the last 3 or 4 years in terms of the size of the staff and the size of the ministry, too. Very, very strong work. Anyway, what I want you to notice on this page is sort of right down near the bottom where you have those percentages. As regards the missionary force, that is the 440 people in the right-hand column, 72% of them are Americans, that's 315, 28% are non-Americans. Where we're lagging behind is in what we were so much the pioneers of 10 years ago. We're lagging behind in the sending of foreign missionaries from countries in the developing world. Now, there are reasons for this. It's very hard, for example, to get Koreans to go out of Korea. All sorts of government regimentation and permits are needed. We're trying, incidentally, to get a Korean missionary team into Sri Lanka at the moment. And there's a lot of things that have to be overcome, bureaucratic hurdles. But only 9% of our staff, who are nationals of the developing world, are serving outside their country. In terms of the overall Christian mission force, about 20% of all Christian missionaries are from the developing world, about 9% of navigator missionaries. Now, this is not to be taken as a criticism of the Filipinos or the Indonesians or the Koreans or anyone else for that matter. It is just a piece of information for you, and I want to underline the extraordinary difficulty that we face in getting third world missionaries out of their countries. And remember the balancing thing I talked about. People are also going cross-culturally within their countries. So that page just gives you an overview. Our staff, by the way, grows about 5% per year. It's growing faster in Asia than anywhere else. It's growing there at 17% per year. Yes?
On that percentage,
would
that include, when you say developing world,
No. Just in the bottom left, it says the developing world I've defined as places other than the USA, the Commonwealth. That's Britain, New Zealand, Australia, and Canada. It excludes Europe, and it excludes Eastern Europe. So it's Asia, Latin America, the Middle East, and Africa. Okay. I think you know, because of Terry's letters to the staff. That's okay, Marvin. Some people kick tires. I just like to kick that. Thank you very much. I think you know that the U.S. leadership team has developed not a strategy, not one of these top-down things, but a very simple strategic statement, and it's here on this page. I just want to call your attention to the fact that missions are well represented within this basic undergirding strategy statement of the American Navigators. In commitment number 2, for example, we want to preserve the mobile and missionary functions of the NAVs. In commitment number 3, there were those words again. We're very integrated nowadays. We want to be biblically rooted, culturally relevant, and continuously effective. In the strategic directions, we might highlight number 4 and number 7, which talk about a thrust and a heart for missions both at home and abroad. So the U.S. leaders, the home U.S. leaders, have an increasing and, I think, a tremendous heart for missions, and it's growing particularly. At this time, thanks to the missions department, to Jim and Marvin, thanks to some other things that have been happening that are good things. Okay? So you are very much a part of the strategic direction of the American Navigators. That's the point I want to leave with you. When we look at pages 9 through 14, we will continue to dance lightly across the surface of these pages, but these pages are pages from a draft missions strategy for the American Navigators, which was largely put together by Marvin, with some help from me and from some others. And these pages are useful background to you in giving a perspective. For example, on page 9, Marvin has plotted out here 6 stages, right from when Dawson sat on the hillside and prayed for the world, 6 stages in the development of the U.S. Navigator mission strategy. Very interesting sometime, just when you're on your own, to read through and pray through these stages. And It ends in six with the years 1980 to 1985. We haven't quite brought it up to date. You'll notice that on the last lines there, it says that the thrust of U.S. missions is not quite as strong as is desired. Well, I think if we did a seventh stage now, Marvin, we would say that we're making a lot of progress. This stopped in a little bit of a valley. Now we're moving. And that's not just a PR statement. We are moving ahead in our mission strategy in the USA for three or four reasons. One, much more dialogue in the last 2 years between senders and receivers. We're not just sending people to where the receivers haven't asked for them, and on the other hand, the receivers are not failing to communicate with us just about the type and quantity of people whom they want. Secondly, the very existence of the missions department is an innovation in the last 2 years, and meetings like this. Three, the overseas leaders are coming to the USA, and they're getting with the US leadership team, and they're explaining what their vision is for their part of the world. So we have more information and more prayer fuel for a good missions program. This year, as Marvin may have told you, is a good year. This is the biggest group that I've seen in the last 3 years. That's what I mean by a good year. Quantity and quality is of our new missionaries is really up. Page 10 has to do with the characteristics of a good mission strategy. And basically what I'm saying on that page is that a good mission strategy, point one, has to embrace both home and foreign missions. We've touched on that twice this morning. It has to be disciplined. We don't believe in this mission agency about everyone just going where they feel their geographical call is. Most of us don't have geographical calls as navigators. There would be chaos, nay, there would be anarchy, if all of us just upped and went wherever we thought the Lord might want us to start. Three, it's cooperative, because we're teaming together with those other established countries. Four, it's committed, because we understand that our product, if you like, is laborers. And we're not going all over the place. We are focusing on the raising up of converts, disciples, and laborers. Okay? There's a note there about the U.S. ethnic ministries at the foot of the page, why that's important. You might like to read that sometime. Over to page 11. Page 11, this is draft material. I need to tell you that. I don't want you to walk away with the fact, with the impression that page 11, for example, is a decision by Terry Taylor and the U.S. leaders that this is the final word on the U.S. mission strategy. This was some staff work that Marvin and others presented to the U.S. leadership team last year, and I think it's in concert with the way that Terry Taylor and the men are thinking, but it isn't, if you like, an official navigator document. It's just for you to give you the flavor of where we're tracking. This mission's focus, we want to plant and develop navigator ministries that are biblically rooted, there we go again, in every major nation. How many major nations do we think there are? Approximately 440, you remember? How many are we in? Approximately 80. The laborers are still few. And there are some crucial success factors that are necessary. I want to zero in merely on number seven. Number seven says that it's crucial to identify, recruit, and develop new types of missionary in response to changing contexts, including both lay and professional missionaries. And some of you are going, I know, as missionary specialists. Some of you will have employment in the country to which you're going to. And we're seeing more types of missionary going overseas now because the world is becoming more complex. Let me briefly, at this point, introduce to you the idea of Project Access, which is a project designed to help the navigators get more into closed countries. How many of you are familiar with Project Access? Okay, another one-page handout, my final one. Thank you. As those are being handed out, let me just mention that Project Access is a global initiative by the navigators, and it just got going in June of last year. And the idea is to help us navigators get positioned, get into, be resident into, move in and out of what we call closed countries, this 70% of the world. And here on this blue page, we explain the basic structure of this project, which is available to help you if you are going to a part of the world which is typically known as a closed part. We have a very gifted layman, Dr. John Cassidy from Minneapolis, who is giving more than half his time to helping us get this concept launched. And the basic concept, as it says here, is this: teamwork, matching us, the missionaries, in a team setting with one or two businessmen who, if you like, have an entree into that country. We have people who are in the jewelry trade going into the Soviet Union. We have people who are doing barter between places like Afghanistan and places like Romania. Businessmen who are gifted and motivated and strong believers, and these businessmen who have volunteered to team up with us, we call facilitators. They provide the business initiatives and the business decisions. We provide, one, the language ability, not just for the ministry, but to help the business there; two, the cultural understanding; three, the geographic mobility within the target. We can move around in many of these countries. So this is a teaming up type of thing in order to help us minister more effectively in closed countries. Charlie Docmo is the person who is really the driving administrative force of the whole operation. It's going well. I would say that it's specializing at the moment in Eastern Europe and in the Arab countries, and moving a little bit into Asia, but not much yet. There's much to be done. Cindy Larson is here this morning. You know Cindy? Cindy, raise your hand, please. Cindy is Charlie's secretary, and Cindy is the person to talk to if you would like more information on Project Access. It is highly relevant to you if you are going into a closed country. Okay? So there's just a little bit of information on it there. Then we have pages 12, 13, and 14, which were recently prepared by Marvin. I'm going to ask him to make a comment or two on that, and then I'll mention the prayer requests, and we'll be through. Marvin.
These three pages are an attempt to give an accurate picture of what we are doing and have been doing in our missions program. I find coming back to the States that statistics can be very misleading, especially when you couple those with some misconceptions about being a missionary. One misconception I find frequently is if we can just get more people out, that's good. Jim North and I have been receiving field leaders on the other end, and we'd say just getting more people is not necessarily good if it's not the right people. So what I've tried to do in these three pages is combine both quantity and quality, because as I look at an evaluation of our missions program, I feel like we need to evaluate it from the point of view, are we being effective in terms of our missions sending? And effectiveness has to do with both quantity and quality. So the first page is on our new missionary sending, and this gives a picture of what we've done in terms of sending new missionaries over the last 10 years. Basically, this page would be a reflection of quantity. When you first go out, we send out more people. The second page, U.S. missionaries on the field, tells how many missionaries are actually on the field at any point in time over the whole history of our missionary sending. This is divided into two parts: the career missionaries, which are made up of our area reps, contact staff, missionary specialists, which go out for multi-term assignments, and the short-term missionaries, which go out for single-term assignments, making up the total missionary staff force. In addition, we have 75 missionary associates that also make up our missionaries on the field force. This picture gives an indication of both quantity and quality, because the ones who are out there, who have stayed out there, give an indication of quality as well as just the numerical quantity. The third page is what I call the impact of U.S. missionaries on the world. Another misconception I find is that people think if you go out as a missionary, you should stay forever. This isn't consistent with the nature of the mission field world today, and also it reflects on some inaccurate understandings of just what's our goal, our aim, our intent, our purpose as we go as missionaries. And it seems to me that the given that this chart then gives an even more of a dimension of quality in terms of our stated aim, and that is, it's not just to have American missionaries on the field, but also the fruit of their ministry over the years. So this page gives an indication of both the American missionaries we currently have on the field, coupled with the non-American staff all around the world. In other words, not just the staff who are missionaries, some are in their own country, some have gone as missionaries, but see, all the staff that have been raised up in all the other countries, all the other nationalities, are the fruit over the years of the American missionary effort. And so some, for example, take Dave and Sherry Hall, who were with us in Ghana, are coming back this summer, ending their missionary service in Africa, and some would say, that's really bad, they have come back. We can't measure the impact of that by just saying, well, that's, you know, minus one from our on-field force. We have to look at all the ones who are still out there, all the laborers that they have raised up, and the non-American staff is an indicator of that fruit. Now, you have to keep in mind that we know who the staff are, but for every one non-American staff person, that represents scores and hundreds of actual fruit people in the ministry. But when you look at this, you'll see that in the last 10 years, the impact is the top combination of the American missionaries and the non-American staff. This would be all of our staff on the field over the 10 years, that has risen quite significantly over the last 10 years. And I think that this is very encouraging because it gives an indication of both quantity, but especially quality. And underneath you see in the 10 years, we have expanded from just ministering in 34 countries to 62 countries. So as you look at these, you'll see in terms of the first page, new sending, we've averaged about 50 new missionaries a year. That stayed fairly steady. In terms of the on-the-field force, our career missionaries are continually on the fields, continuing to go up. The short-term missionaries have gone down the last few years, so that's something we're looking into, and we'd like to take some steps on that. But I'd say overall, this tells me that God is doing something significant, continuing to do something significant, and today we have more American missionaries and significantly more staff ministering in more countries all around the world than we ever have had in the whole history of the Navigators. So God is doing some great and significant things, and I travel around staff conferences and all, and I hear statements like, well, we've severely curtailed our missionary sending, we should be doing more. And I look at this and say that overall, if you look at the big picture and what I call a three-dimensional perspective, you know, you look at one side and you can get a certain impression, but you have to sort of look at the three things together, and you'll say, yes, I think God is continuing to do some very significant things through the missionary outreach of the Navigators around the world.
Thank you, Marvin. And of course, not only is it three-dimensional, but perhaps it's four-dimensional because of the cross-cultural sending and work within individual countries that we talked about. Just to finish off here, I have provided for you page 15, an organization chart. We don't make a big play about this. In fact, all that I would like to say about it is that the more we get into the true concepts of a global society, that is a society which is interdependent in the sense of 1 Corinthians 12, a body that is beautifully functional with everyone gifted and everyone essential, the less we shall draw organization charts and the more we shall be, if I may say so, laterally supportive of one another and mutually enhancing. But we currently still report to people who report to other people, so for what it's worth, here's how it looks at the moment around the world, just the overview of it. The last two pages have to do with global prayer requests. These are detachable and usable. As far as I know, there's nothing confidential in here. There were one or two omissions. For example, we haven't mentioned Botswana here, and I know we have someone going to Botswana. So I don't make this is these things always change, and that's one of the exciting things about the navigators. New things keep happening. So in summary here, change, complexity, and challenge is where we started from. The look at the global context. Secondly, there are 440 nations that are of global significance for the navigators. We have a presence, just a toehold, in about 80, and we have seen 19 come to the stage where they, in turn, are senders and contributors to the global mission. We are doing some significant strategic planning. Most of it is at the block level. We have 12 blocks, and at the country level. And we have a missions program which is becoming more creative and more diverse rather than the reverse as we go along. The things that I have said here today will probably have overwhelmed you in the number of things that are available here. But remember, during the course of this week, you do have Marvin and Jim North and Bob Whitmer and Cindy Larson and myself to talk to or to contact, and lots of other people too who will come and talk to you. Our desire is to give you enough information just to stimulate and whet your appetites for any particular area that you want to pursue. A few of these pages, finally, are marked confidential. Please respect that. There may be just two or three here that mention a particular situation or a closed country. I'm not sure how many there are, but if a page is marked confidential, just keep it to yourself. We want to protect not so much ourselves. We don't get into lots of trouble, but to protect the nationals in these countries among whom we are ministering. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you for tolerating the speed at which we cantered around the course.